Osho. No water, no moon. Talks on Zen stories. Discourse number 3. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
What is pure life? What do you call purity? Because whatsoever you call purity is not the real purity. Your purity is a calculation, a moral calculation. Your purity is not the purity of a saint. His purity is innocence. Your purity is a sort of cunningness, a shrewdness. This has to be understood first. If you understand it deeply, only then you can understand what a wise man is, what a saint is, what a man of knowledge is. Because if your measurement is wrong, if your very base of judgment is wrong, everything will go wrong with it. Real purity is just like a child, innocent. Innocent about what is good, what is bad. Innocent about any distinction. Real purity does not know what is God and what is devil. But your purity is a choice. Choice of the God against the devil. Choice of the good against the bad. You have already made a distinction. You have already divided existence. And a divided existence cannot lead to innocence. Innocence flowers only when existence is undivided. You accept as it is. You don't choose. You don't divide. You don't make any distinctions. You don't know really what is good and what is bad. If you know, then you will calculate. Then purity will be manufactured. It will be a flowering. I will tell you one anecdote. Khalil Gibran has written a beautiful story. A priest was going to the temple. Just by the side of the road, he saw a man almost at the verge of death, bleeding, dying, as if he has been attacked very severely. Wounds all over, blood flowing, soaked in his own blood. The priest was in a hurry. He had to reach the temple in time. People must be waiting there. But he was a man of morality. I will not say of purity. He was a man of morality. He pondered what to do. He calculated. And then he thought it is better to help this man who is dying. This is what Jesus has said. It is better to forget the temple, the worshippers, they can wait a little. But this man has to be helped immediately, otherwise he will die. So he went near to the man. But the moment he saw his face, he was scared. This face looked familiar, very evil looking. Then he suddenly remembered that in his temple there is a picture of the devil, and this is the man. This is devil, nobody else. So he started running towards the temple. The devil called, he said, "Priest, listen, if I die, you will repent forever. Because if I die, if the evil dies, where your God will be? If the bad dies, how you will know what is good? You exist because of me. Think over." The priest stopped. The devil was right. If the devil dies, there will be no hell. And if there is no fear, who is going to worship God? All prayers are based on fear. You are afraid. Your love towards God is based on the fear of the devil. Your goodness is measured through the evil. God needs the devil. The devil said, "God needs me, he cannot be without me." And all temples will fall down, and nobody will come to worship. And you will not find a single man who is religious if I am not there. I tempt them. Through my temptation, they become saints. Have you ever heard about any saint who was not tempted by a devil? Your Jesus, your Zoroaster, your Buddha, all have been tempted by me. It is me who make them saints. So come back. Hesitated. The priest hesitated a little. But the devil was logical, and devil is always logical. He is the logic personified. You cannot reason with him, you cannot argue. If you argue, you are defeated. You cannot win the argument with the devil. The priest had to concede and agree. He said, "You seem to be right. Where we will be without you?" So he carried the devil on his back to the hospital. He waited there. until he was certain that now there is no danger and the devil will survive. And with the devil, all the temples, all the priests and all religions survive. This priest is a moral man, but not a pure man. His life is a mathematical calculation. And if you calculate, you are already defeated by the devil. You cannot calculate better than him. If you argue, if you divide life, if it becomes a logical problem, there is no possibility of your ever winning it. The game is already lost. You are on a losing battle. A man of innocence does not know who is God and who is devil. A man of innocence lives out of his innocence, not out of his calculations. He is not shrewd. He is simple. He lives moment to moment. Neither the past nor the future is meaningful to him. This very moment is enough unto itself. But your morality is created by the priest who helped the devil. Because the devil argued, and he argued rightly. Your morality is not pure. So whenever there is someone who can behave the way you think a pure man should behave, who can manipulate himself, you honor him, you respect him, you call him a saint. Your saints are as bogus as you are. Because you decide and judge who is a saint. Your morality is just a fear, a hidden fear. And the disguise is so cleverly disguised that you never become aware of it. How? A calculation can become innocent. And without becoming innocent, innocent like the trees, innocent like the animals, innocent like the babies. How can purity happen to you? It is nothing, it is not something you control. If you control, it is a repression. And the contrary is always present there. If you become a celibate, sex is there, hidden in the unconscious, waiting for its moment to assert, to rebel. If you become non-violent, violence is there. The opposite cannot be thrown out. If you choose, the opposite is always repressed. That's all you can do. Only in an innocent mind the opposite disappears, because nothing has been chosen. The opposite cannot exist without choice. Hence Krishnamurti is consistently emphasizing not to choose and be choiceless. That's the base of innocence. But you can deceive yourself by choosing choicelessness. Because Krishnamurti says, be choiceless, so I will be choiceless. If you decide, the will has entered, and will is cunning. If you decide to be choiceless, your choicelessness will be part of a morality, not part of purity. Just understand, don't choose. Don't choose even choicelessness. Simply understand the whole situation. that whatsoever you choose, whatsoever you do, will come out of the calculating mind. It cannot be the real thing. Your mind can produce only dreams. It cannot produce the truth. Truth cannot be produced. Nobody can produce it. It is there. It has to be looked. Nothing is to be done, just a look is needed. A look without any prejudice. A look without any choice. A look without any distinctions. A man of God, if he has suppressed, if he has denied the devil, is not a real man of God. The devil will be there by the corner. Once you divide, you are caught in the battle of the opposites. You will be crushed. If you don't decide, you don't know what is good, what is bad. Whatsoever happens, you simply accept. It is happening. What can you do? Nothing can be done. So you float like a white cloud. You don't know where you are going, why you are going. The wind blows to the north, you go to the north. And the wind then drifts towards the south, you drift towards the south. You float with the wind. You don't say, I am going to the south, I cannot go to the north. You don't fight. A man of purity is not a soldier, he is a saint. And a man of morality is a soldier, he is not a saint. Of course the fight is within, not without. Of course the fight is not with someone else, but with oneself. But the fight is there. You need not be a fighter. And if you fight, you will lose the battle. How can you fight the whole? You are just a tiny part, an atomic part. How can you fight the whole? A man of purity neither fights nor surrenders, because surrender also belongs to the soldiers. First he fights, then he finds it is impossible to win, then he surrenders. His surrender is also second hand. It comes through the fight. A man of purity simply acts. He is not a fighter. He need not surrender. There is nothing to surrender, nobody to surrender. Who will surrender? And what is to be surrendered? He has never been in fight. Understanding leads you to acceptance. And that acceptance gives you purity. But this purity cannot be honored by people, by the neighbors. They cannot understand it. Morality belongs to a country. Purity belongs to no country. Morality belongs to an age. Purity is non-temporal. Morality belongs to this society or that. There are as many moralities as many societies are there. Purity is one. Wherever you go, it is the same. Just like the taste of the sea. Wherever you go, it is salty. A Buddha, or a Jesus, or a Ramakrishna, if you taste them, they are all just like the sea, the same. But a man of morality is different. A man of morality, if he is a Mohammedan, will be different. If he is a Hindu, he cannot be the same. If he is a Christian, again he will be different. A man of morality has to follow the code, the law of the society. Societies are many, moralities are millions. Societies change, moralities change. Purity is eternal. It transcends time, space. It transcends climate, countries. It transcends tribes. It transcends all that is man-made. Purity is not man-made. Moralities are man-made. Now we should enter this beautiful story. It happened in reality. It is a historic fact. The Zen master Hakun was honored by his neighbors as one who led a pure life. They didn't know. They were not aware that the purity of their conceptions cannot be applicable to this man. They were not aware. They thought he is a moral man. And he was not a moral man. He was a pure man, innocent one. But not a moral one. He was a religious man. And remember the difference. He belonged to the eternal innocence. He was childlike. But the people honored him because they were not aware yet of the distinction between morality and amoral purity. They thought that he is a saint, but he was not a saint of their concepts. He was a saint, but he was not a saint that can be measured by you. Your standards won't apply there. You will have to throw your measurements and look. You will have to throw your judgments and look. Only then the saint, a real saint, is revealed to you. One day it was discovered that a beautiful girl who lived near Hakun was pregnant. The parents were very angry. At first the girl would not say who the father was, but after much harassment she named Hakun. In great anger the parents went to Hakun, but all he would say was, "Is that so?" He will not deny. He will not accept. He didn't make any commitment. He didn't say, "I am not responsible." He didn't say, "I am responsible." He simply said a very non-committal thing. He said, "Is that so?" As if he was not related. So detached, so absolutely out of it, simply asked, "Is that so, that I am the father of the child?" What does this mean? It means such a total acceptance that even acceptance is not needed. Because when you say, "I accept," deep down you have denied. When you say yes, the no is implied. He will not say even yes. Who he was to say yes or no? If it has happened, if this is a fact, then he will just be a witness to it. If people have come to think that he is the father, then why unnecessarily disturb them and say something this way or that way? He will not choose. This is what choicelessness is. He will not be this or that. He will not defend himself. Purity is never in defense. Morality is always defensive. That's why morality always takes offense very easily. Just you look at a moralist, at a Puritan, and he feels offended. If you say something, he feels offended. He will immediately deny and defend himself. But this is one of the basic psychological insights of all seekers, that whenever you defend something, it means you are afraid. If this Hakun was an ordinary saint, he would have defended. And he was true also in his defense. There was no problem about it. It proved later on that the child never belonged to him. He was not the father. An ordinary saint, a so-called saint, a man of morality, even if he was the father, would have defended it. And this Hakun, he was not the father, but he will not defend. Innocence is insecurity. That's why it is innocence. If you defend and make it secure, it is not innocence. Calculation has entered. What must have happened inside Hakun? Nothing. He simply listened to the fact that people have come to believe that I am the father. So he asked, is that so? That was all. That is all. He didn't react in any way, this way or that. He will not say yes. He will not say no. He is not in defense. He is open and vulnerable. Innocence is vulnerable. It is absolute vulnerability, openness. Whenever you defend, whenever you say that this is not so, you are afraid. Only fear is defensive. Fearlessness cannot be defensive. Fear always armors itself. If somebody says that you are dishonest, you immediately defend. Why? Why be so much worried about it? Why react? Because you know that you are dishonest. That's why it hurts. Truth hurts very much. Because the wound is there. You know you are dishonest. And somebody says you are dishonest, you cannot laugh. You become serious. You have to defend, otherwise the thing will be known. You have to fight, otherwise everybody else will start thinking in those terms. And if people come to know that you are dishonest, it will be difficult to be dishonest then. Because only if people believe that you are honest, you can continue to be dishonest. This is the mathematics. People must believe that you are a true man. Only then you can lie. If everybody knows that you are a liar, finished. How can you lie then? Even lies need a sort of trust about you. You can be a thief only if people believe that you are a saint. Then it is very easy to be a thief. Because people will not try to protect themselves against you. An immoral person will always defend his character. He will try to prove that he is a man of character. But this shows that he is characterless. If you are not dishonest and somebody says you are dishonest, you will say, is that so? Maybe, perhaps. Who knows? He will say, I will look again. I will have a look again within me. You may be right. But this is honesty. How can this man be dishonest who says, I will look, I will try to find, you may be right? This is authentic honesty. This man cannot be dishonest. But you are dishonest and somebody says you take offense. All your defenses are because you take offense. You are always prepared and ready to answer. You carry character certificates with you that I am a man of character. Fear creates an armor. Now, depth psychology has come to realize that all characters are armors. A child is born. He does not know what is good, what is bad. Then he has to be taught to make distinctions. He is punished. If something he goes on doing which is thought bad, what happens to the mind of the child? What happens in his consciousness? As far as his innocence is concerned, he cannot see what is bad in it. Why it is bad? But father and mother, and they are powerful, they say this is bad, and if you do it, you will be punished. If you don't do it, you will be appreciated, awarded. He has to listen to them because they are powerful, and he has to suppress himself and his own innocence. An armor is created around himself. He becomes afraid of certain things he should not do, otherwise he will be punished. He should do certain things because then he is going to be awarded. Greed is created, fear is created, and then he moves in many experiences where he is punished, where he is awarded. By and by he creates a character around his consciousness. Character means creating habits which society thinks are good. Destroying habits which society thinks are bad. This is character. And this character is an armor, because if you don't create it, the society will destroy you. The society won't allow you to exist. To exist, to survive, you have to create a character. Otherwise you will be in jail, punished. Why you are so much against the criminals? Why you punish them so much? Not because their crimes are so great. Not because it is needed by justice. No. You are taking revenge. They disobeyed society. They disobeyed you, their structure, their establishment. They are rebellious. You were saying this is bad and they still did it. The society will take revenge, and your courts and your judges are not really men of justice. They are the hangmen. They are the murderers appointed by the society in the name of justice to take revenge. They murder, they kill, but in the name of justice. A man steals, he is a thief. He is sent to the prison for 10 years, 5 years, 7 years. Is it going to help in any way? When he comes out, is it going to prevent him not to steal again? No, on the contrary, he will come out a more perfect thief, because there in the prison he will meet masters. There he will learn the trade secrets. There he will learn why he has been caught, where he was at fault. Next time it will not be so easy to catch. He will become more efficient. He will become more alert. Your punishment never changes anybody. But you go on punishing, and you say we are punishing to change him. A man murders, the society murders him, because why you murdered? But this seems to be foolish. He murdered, he was wrong, and now the society murders him, and the society is right. And how your killing is going to change him? He will be no more there. No, you are taking revenge. And you know deep down that not only the society is doing that, you are also doing that. You are a father, are a mother. You punish your child. Have you ever observed your mind why you punish? Look deep inside and you will find the revenging attitude. You will say that we are teaching him. How he will learn if he is not punished? But these are just rationalizations. Inside the father feels hurt because the child has disobeyed. He has become rebellious. He has done something which he was said not to do. Father's ego feels hurt. If you look in the old scriptures, Old Testament, Quran, and other scriptures, then you will feel immediately that the God is very revengeful. He will send you to the hell. Not justice needs it, but because you disobeyed. In Old Testament it is said, obedience is virtue, disobedience is sin. It is not a question what is said to you. Obedience is virtue, and disobedience is sin. Obedience is forced, then a character arises. Then the child starts by and by, he learns, becomes calculating what to do, what not to do. The innocent is poisoned. The innocence is no more there now. Calculation has come in. And he knows how to influence you, how to manipulate you, how to be a good child, so he is awarded, and how not to be a bad child. And this character armor works in a double way. He protects himself from the society. But deep inside, The consciousness does not know what is good, what is bad. So he has to fight with himself continuously. This character becomes a double-edged thing. On the outer side, it is a protection from the society. On the inside, it is a constant fight. You fall in love with a woman and she is not your wife. What to do? The society has taught you that this is immoral. But even your consciousness has fallen in love, because the consciousness does not know what is immoral and what is moral. Something happens. You cannot do anything about it. Your character starts fighting. He says, this is immoral. Prevent it. Control it. Don't move on this path. This is wrong. Then you start fighting. This fight creates anxiety. Your spontaneity is lost. In the eyes of others, you are a man of character. You cannot lose your reputation, because then the ego will be lost. Inside also you think that you are a man of character. You start feeling guilty. You start punishing yourself. So many monks in so many monasteries are fasting, not as a religious prayer, but just as a punishment to themselves. They feel guilty, continuously guilty. And it is very difficult to find a monk who is not feeling guilty. Very difficult. Because everything is wrong. To look at a beautiful woman is wrong. To eat food with taste is wrong. To feel comfortable is wrong. Everything is wrong. Continuous guilt. So what to do now? Only one thing remains, and he is not a criminal, because he has not done anything. So the society cannot punish him, and you all give your respect to him. So what he can do? He has to punish himself. He will go on a fast. He will go on a continuous vigilance for 7 days. He will not allow himself to sleep. He will not allow himself to be comfortable. He will not eat with taste. He will not look at anything beautiful. He will not enjoy anything. That is how he will punish. And the more he punishes himself, the more honorable he becomes in your eyes. And he is just the ill man, perverted. He is pathological. He is a case. He has to be studied, not respected. Something has gone wrong within him. His mind is not at ease, divided, fragmented. He is continuously against himself. This is what anxiety means. When you are against yourself, you are in anxiety. Continuously fighting with yourself will create tension. And you cannot allow anything, because you are always afraid that if you allow, then all that you have suppressed will come up. You cannot relax. Your so-called sins cannot relax. Even in sleep they cannot relax, because they are afraid of relaxation. If they relax, then what will happen? Then the body will say, be comfortable. Then the mind will say, find taste in food, find tasteful food. Then the body will desire, find a woman, find a beautiful body to hug. Find someone with whom you can merge and melt. If you relax, then all that you have suppressed will also relax. So your sins cannot relax. They are afraid of relaxation. they are tense, continuously tense. You can feel that tenseness. If you go near a saint, all around him there is a field of tenseness. You will also become tense if you go near a saint. But with a real saint, a sage, who is a man of purity, not a man of morality, he is continuously relaxed. If you go near him, you will feel relaxed. But then you may feel afraid, because if you feel relaxed, your own repressions will start coming. Many people come to me and they say, this is dangerous, because when we meditate and relax, many things that have not been bothering us before start bothering. A married man with 6 children came to me just a few days before, and he said, never in my life I have looked at other women. Never. But what is happening? I am meditating, and for the first time, and I am now 48 with 6 children, wife, and everything is okay. Suddenly, woman has become very attractive. What to do? He is afraid now. He must have been repressing this continuously for 48 years. Now suddenly he has learned how to relax. But when you relax totally. So all that has been repressed also relaxes. For the first time he is becoming young again. Really, I told him, you have never been young. Now you are becoming young again. So woman has become attractive. But don't be afraid. Everything is going to become attractive now. The trees will look different, the flowers will look different, and why not a woman? Everything is going to become different. And if you are afraid of this, then existence can never become beautiful to you. And when the whole existence has become beautiful, then you have come to the door of the divine. Never before it. And you are afraid of a woman. What will happen when the God comes? He will be so beautiful, you will forget your wife completely. What you will do? You are afraid of a tiny woman. What will happen to you when the tremendous beauty explodes all over the world, everywhere? So don't close. But he said, you may be right, but what will happen if my family? I have got children. These are the fears. With a repressed mind, relaxation is the most dangerous thing. You come to me and you say how to relax. You don't know what you are asking, because your society has trained you not to relax. Your society has taught you how to control. And here I am teaching you how to relax. It is absolutely antisocial. But God is antisocial. The beyond is antisocial. Your society is created by pathological minds just like you. They have made rules and regulations, and pathological people are always very efficient in making rules and regulations. They themselves are repressed and in misery. They want others also to be repressed in misery. They cannot allow you to be so happy. Look at a schoolmaster in a primary school with his staff in his hand, killing small children who are still happy. The society has not disturbed them. It's still spontaneous. Look at this schoolmaster. said, angry, always angry, always killing the natural, the Tao, the spontaneous. He will be happy only when these children all become old and dead. Then he will be at ease. He has done his job. Psychologists say that people who are attracted towards schools to become teachers are people who are sadist. And there is nothing like a school if you are a sadist. Because so weak, helpless children, you can do anything with them. You beat them and they cannot rebel. You do something and they cannot reply. They will have to suffer. And you are doing this in their own good. So you are beyond reproach. You are helping them to grow. Pascal has said that the whole society is mad and the children falls into the hands of so many madmen. They come innocent, but immediately we take charge and turn them into madmen. Some of them escape from the back door, they are criminals. And some of them escape from the front door, they are sages. Sages and criminals have one quality similar, and that is rebelliousness. But the criminal has gone wrong in his rebelliousness. His rebelliousness is destructive, not creative. And the saint has taken a route of rebelliousness, but creative. The parents were very angry. At first the girl would not say who the father was, but after much harassment she named Hakun. In great anger the parents went to Hakun, but all he would say was, "Is that so?" After the child was born, it was taken to Hakun, who had lost his reputation by this time, although he didn't seem much disturbed by the fact. Whether you honor or whether you dishonor cannot make any difference to a sage, to a man of purity. What you think about him is really irrelevant. Why it is so much relevant to you what others think? Why others' opinion is so much relevant to you? Why you so much care? Because you don't know who you are. You depend on their opinions about yourself. That's your only self-knowledge. If they say you are good, you are good. If they say you are bad, you are bad. You have nothing inside which can say that their opinions are their opinions. If I am good, I am good. Whatsoever they say makes no difference. If I am bad, I am bad. The whole world may respect me like a saint, but if I am bad, I know I am bad. And this reputation cannot become a substitute. It is useless. And if I am good, the whole world may say that I am not good, bad, evil. The very devil incarnate. What does it make? How it makes any difference? One who knows himself is never disturbed by what you think about him. But one who doesn't know himself, he is always disturbed. Because his whole knowledge consists of your opinions. His whole knowledge is just a file he has gathered about what people think about him. This is not knowledge, not self-knowledge. This is self-ignorance, which you hide, disguise by others' opinions. Your whole identity, your whole image is made by others. You are bound to remain in constant anxiety because others go on changing their opinions. Opinions are like climate. It is never the same. In the morning it was cloudy and now the cloud has gone. Now it is sunny and the next moment it is raining. Opinions are just like clouds, just like the climate. What can you do about it? Look at Richard Nixon. Just a moment before, he is everything, and just a moment later, nothing. The opinion has changed. The people who were for him are against him. And the same people, this is the beauty of it, the same people who will push you towards the throne will pull you down. There is a dynamics, an inner law, that the people who respect you deep down also disrespect you. The people who love you also hate you. Because they are divided. They are not one. So when they help you to reach to the throne, one part of them is finished. The love part. Now what will happen to the hate part? Immediately the hate part starts functioning. So once a man becomes respectable, the climate is changing already. Once a man has become a president or a prime minister, the voters are changing already. Really, the moment they voted, one part finished, their love part. Now the hate part will come up. So the same people take you to the throne and the same people bring you down. Only a sage remains undisturbed. Why? Because he never paid any attention to what you say. What you say is really rubbish. You don't know anything about yourself and you say something about Mahavir, Buddha, Christ. You don't know anything about yourself. And you are so confident about Jesus that he is good or bad. It is rubbish. And a person can pay attention to your rubbish only if he is just like you. A sage is not like you. And this is the difference. After the child was born, it was taken to Hakun, who had lost his reputation by this time, of course. Obviously. The same people who thought that he is a sage started thinking that he is a devil. He has committed the greatest sin. Because for people, sex is the greatest sin. You are so much against life that sex has become the greatest sin because it is the origin of life. You are so dead, that's why sex has become the greatest sin. Because sex is the most alive phenomena in the world. Nothing else is so alive as sex. You come through it. The trees come through it, the birds come through it, everything comes through it. Anything that becomes alive comes through it. It is the original source. If you can give any parallel to God in this world, it is sex. That's why Hindus have made their symbol, Shivalinga. Hindus are really rare. No comparison anywhere in the world. Very courageous people to make Shivalinga the sex organ of Shiva, the symbol of the divine. Sex is the most divine thing in the world. But why you call it the sin? Because from the very beginning you have been taught that it is sin. You have completely forgotten that you have come out of it. And you have completely disguised the fact that when the sex energy is finished in you, you will die. It is sex energy throbbing in you which is life. That's why a young man is more alive and the old man is less alive. What is the difference between a young man and an old man? In a young man, the sex energy is in a flood. In the old man, the supply has disappeared. Now, the flood is disappearing. It has become just like a dripping stream. The moment sex energy has disappeared, you are dead. Sex is life, and we have made it the greatest sin. Deep down, we are against life. So when you come to know that a saint has been in sexual relationship, all reputation immediately disappears. If he was a thief, it was not so bad. You could have forgiven him. If he was accumulating money, your sins are accumulating, then you would have forgiven him. It was not a big problem. Greed is not a big problem. Whatsoever he was doing, you could have forgiven him, but sex, impossible. We have become so deadly against that Christians say that Jesus was born without sex. Because how Jesus can be born out of sex, such as the original sin? How Jesus can be born out of sex? Everyone else is born out of sex, not Jesus. Just because sex is such a dangerous thing, they said that Jesus is born from the Holy Ghost. There is no father to Jesus. There has been no sexual intercourse. He has born out of the womb without any meeting of the other sex. What is nonsense? But leave Jesus aside and the Christians. You, if you even think that your father was sometime or other must be making love to your mother, you will feel guilty. Other, how you are born? You are not a bastard. But just to think that your father making love to your mother, the whole thing seems ugly. Whole thing seems so ugly that you cannot conceive your father doing that. Others may be doing, but your father? Impossible. You are born out of a brahmachari father. That's what Christians are saying about Jesus. And when you come to discover that a saint, a great sage like Hakum, has made a girl pregnant, obviously, not only respect is gone, he must have been insulted as much as possible. It would have become impossible for him to go around the town to beg. People must be throwing stones at him. The same people who were bringing garlands and flowers and who were bowing down in his feet, the same people. But Thakun was not disturbed. Thakun took great care of the child. He obtained milk, food, and everything else the child needed from his neighbors. A year later, the girl mother could stand no longer. So she told her parents the truth. It must have been too heavy on her, seeing Hakun's respect going down and down, seeing the insults being thrown at Hakun, seeing that the whole town is against him, seeing him begging for the child, for the milk, for the food, and doors being closed on his face. It must have been real heavy. So she told her parents the truth. The real father was a young man who worked in the fish market. They always work in the fish market, the real fathers. The mother and father of the girl went round at once to Hakun to tell him the story, apologize at great length, ask his forgiveness, and get the child back at the matter. As the master willingly yielded the child, he said, "Is that so?" In misery, in happiness, the stage remains the same. Respected, insulted, the stage remains the same. In life, in death, the stage remains the same. He again simply said the same three words, "Is that so?" Again, non-committal. Again, not committing anything. Not saying anything, simply accepting a fact. If that is so, okay. This is the consciousness of purity. Whatsoever life brings, welcome it. It brings misery and insult, accept it, welcome it. It brings honor, happiness, welcome it, accept it, and don't make any difference between the two. If you make a difference, your balance is lost, and the balance is the purity. When you are balanced, you are a sage. When the balance is lost, you are lost, you have become a sinner. Sin is not something that you do. Sin is something that happens within you when the balance is lost. It is not an act. It is the inner balance. What Mahavir has called samyaktva, inner balance. Neither this nor that. What Upanishads have called neti neti. Not this, not that. Just in between. Neither moving to this nor moving to that. Because if you move, even a slight movement, which nobody can detect except you. Remember this, nobody can detect your inner balance. Only you can detect it. It is so subtle. But even a slight movement, and you are no more at peace. You are no more at home. You have lost the divine. Because what a slight leaning means, it means you have chosen. It means distinction is made. It means you have said this is good, that is bad. It means expectation has come in. It means desire has sprouted. It means now you are motivated. Had Hakun said, right, so you have come to know the truth, that means he was no sage at all. Because that means for the whole year he was waiting for this moment. He was not in the present. For the future, he was thinking someday or other day, the truth must be known. The people will respect me again. When they come to know that the child doesn't belong to me, they will respect me again. My respect will be back. Then he would have waited. But the balance is lost. If Hakun was not a sage, he must have thought and prayed to God that God reveal the truth to people. But why? If it happens that a child has happened to you and people think that it is your child, he took every care of the child, just like as a father. If life has brought the child to you, what difference does it make? Who was the real father? No difference. The child needs the father, that is the thing. And Hakun fathered the child as lovingly as no father can do that. Even if the child was yours, it would have been difficult to take such care as he took. It was no sin of the child. He was not against the child. If you had been in Hakun's place, you must have killed the child. Because he was the cause of your misery. You must have thrown the child and moved to another village where people can respect you again because they don't know you. You must have done something to defend your respect. Your whole prestige was shattered. And Hakun was just caring about the child, not worried about the village. What people say is not the question. It is irrelevant. The child needs the father. So Hakun became the father. He was not disturbed. He didn't react. And then after 1 year, when you take care of a child so lovingly, attachment arises, bound to be so. Even if the child is not yours, the child becomes yours. To live with a child for 1 year and to suffer so much for the child, sacrifice so much for the child, a deep bond, a deep relationship arises. One becomes attached. But when the parents came again and they told the whole story, asked his forgiveness and get the child back, as the master willingly yielded the child, there was not a single trembling of attachment. He simply yielded the child back. He said, is that so? As if nothing has happened. This whole year has been a dream. Only the dream is broken and you are awake. A sage lives in this world amidst you as if he is living in a dream. You are shadows. He lives amidst you just as if he is enacting a part. He is not involved. He is there, but not in it. He remains an outsider. And if you can remain an outsider, then sooner or later you will come to realize no water, no moon. Because when you get involved, water is created. Then you live with the reflection. Then you cannot move to the real. Then you live with the unreal. Your attachment creates the delusion. The delusion is not there outside you. The Maya is not there outside you. It is within you, in your attitudes, attached, choosing for this, against that, making distinctions. Like and dislike. It is in you. You create your illusion. And then you live in it. Then you are clouded by it. In that clouded state, you can see only the reflection. You can never see the real moon. This Thakur remained balanced. Whatsoever happened outside didn't affect at all the inside. The inside remained balanced. No waves, no vibrations of the outside entered. He remained silent, as if it is a dream. And whatsoever comes, accept it. He didn't become a doer, a karta. He remained a witness. These three words, "Is that so?" belong to the witnessing soul. Not taking any judgment, simply saying, "Is that so?" And this is all that was inside him. "Is that so? If it is so, okay." A sage okays everything that happens. He has no choice. And when there is no choice, there is no water. No water, reflection disappears, Maya disappears, no moon. Enough for today?